Welcome back, Birds 365. Mark Farzetta sitting in with the great John McMullen, having ourselves a time. I'm still stuck on backwards hat John McMullen. I need a backwards hat John McMullen at some point in the next hour. Do you have a hat available?
I do have a hat available. I always have a hat available, but my backwards hat days are over. I had many of them, in my younger days.
Ken Griffey Jr. was coming up, man, when I was just a little kid. And yeah, it was definitely a flipped lid for Ken Griffey Jr. back in the day, friend. All right. So there's a couple of things I want to talk to you about here. And one is the Isaiah Rodgers thing. Cause I agree with you. I hear people talking about Isaiah Rodgers. Like,
by the way, Isaiah seems like, he's always on social media. He seems like a good dude, but I haven't met him yet. But I hope he's a great player, but boy, they've made him out to be, he's a nice part-time player in Indianapolis. Looked like he was ascending. Settle down, people.
Again, he's not James Bradbury. And it's almost, it's kind of like it's the backup quarterback syndrome. That's what it is. Like, the one guy's not doing, the backup quarterback's great. Most popular guy in town is the guy holding the clipboard, usually, right? That whole thing. But with the Isaiah Rodgers story, I find this so fascinating because a lot of people I don't think they get it. And you can tell me if I'm wildly wrong or if I'm accurate here, John. But to me, the threat of the NFL, and people bring up moral things when they talk about a year suspension. And I understand why, because morally, as a collective people, there are worse things than gambling. However, if you're the NFL, far worse things from gambling. Let me just reiterate that. But if you're the NFL, the worst possible thing is somebody watching a game and not thinking that game is legitimate. And the way that happens is if you have players not only betting on sports, which is what you were talking about with the revision of the rule, like, all right, you can bet on basketball, just don't do it in the parking lot, don't do it at the team facility. But Isaiah Rodgers bet on his team, bet on games he played in, and bet from the team facility.
Yeah.
Like every possible horrible box check, like even the most compulsive gamblers looking at that going, not a smart move, bro. And probably Roger Goodell and the NFL is looking at it and going, that's not a good move, because that's exactly what they're worried about. They're worried about fans looking at the sport going, well, this isn't legitimate anymore. Like, why am I going to waste time on this when it's simply guys trying to pad their own pockets that are already, if you're a professional athlete, by the average Joe's standpoint, your pockets are already pretty padded. So why are you trying to get more out of this? That is what I think the NFL is most afraid of above anything else.
Well, they are, but that barn is out of the horse. I mean, the NFL's kind of leaned into it with the Keegan-Michael Key sort of script writers skit. Right. So people already believe that to a certain extent, that the NFL is scripted at times, when their team loses. It's always when their team loses.
Sure.
It's always – Jody and I talked about this a lot, and Jody's more of a gambler than I am. But it's a scandal waiting to happen. I mean, you saw what happened in the NBA. I forget the kid's name.
Jonte Porter, I think. Yeah.
Jonte Porter. Yeah. Who's basically, letting people bet prop bets and he's not playing or whatever. I mean, come on, dude. And people are making major money on this kind of stuff. And sorry, you go back to the referee scandal with, Tim Donaghy.
Yeah, Tim Donaghy, yeah.
Yeah, who's local to us here in the Delaware Valley. It's easier in basketball, but in football, and I bring up this new tackling rule, Mark. I brought that up at the time, the hip drop tackle, which just came into existence. I love fans with that. Well, it's, you can't do that. Shut up. They never even used the term hip drop tackle. I've been covering this game for 25 years. I never heard the term until last year. Made it up.
You know why? You know why you haven't heard the term? And I'll tell you why. It's called a tackle.
Yeah.
He tackled him. No one looks at the form tackles. You can look at, throwing a shoulder into a guy to knock him down on a kill shot, that type of thing. Kill, whatever. Old term, outdated term, kill shot. Miscusi, okay? But the hip drop tackle is a very technical thing that, nobody used because it's just a tackle.
Yeah.
So if you're a player, don't get me. All right. If you want to go down that road.
The rule is stupid. I agree with you, but we can get into that another day. From the gambling perspective, I'm like, how easy would it be? The easiest people, forget about the players. The easiest people to get to would be the officials, because they don't make as much money and they can really affect a game and swing a game. How easy is it to throw a flag for a tackle? You get 15 yards. That changes the whole complexion of a potential game.
Absolutely.
There's always unintended consequences, but getting it back to Rodgers, that was a dumb. I have no problem with him being suspended for a year. And by the way, under the old policy that he got suspended, technically he was suspended indefinitely, at least a year. And he was eligible to be apply for reinstatement after the Super Bowl, which he did. Now they've changed the rule that if you bet on your team, you get a 2-year pop. So is it possible they could say, this guy deserves 2 years? I guess they can do whatever the hell they want. It's over-legislated. They change rules all the time. My advice to Eagles fans were, I think he's going to be reinstated at some point, unless he's done something else.
This year?
Yeah, which since he got suspended.
A 2-year ban?
Well, the new rule is a 2-year ban, yeah.
Okay.
So I'm saying he was suspended under the original rule, which they kind of threw together at the last minute, and they figured out it was too harsh for the guys betting on basketball games.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, I get that.
I think they suspended a bunch of guys, if you remember, for 6 games, and then they scaled that back to 2 games. Mm-hmm. That's when it was late September when they changed it, and they said, all right, this is too harsh. And we're going to change it. But they made it more harsh for players betting on their own teams.
As they should.
Yeah.
I mean, here's what I'll say. And the two circumstances are not comparable. But in just in terms of the entire NFL fan base being in an uproar simultaneously, if gambling spreads to the players and it continues to be guys betting on their own teams in the practice facility and betting in games that they're playing in, then that's obviously going to be an uproar league-wide. But the last time I saw a league-wide uproar from the fan base was the replacement officials, John, where everyone was like, well, this isn't legitimate. And the game wasn't legitimate when you had replacement officials running the show. You at least have the idea with the officials today that, oh, they're the best. They're the best at what they do, so that's why they're there. When you clearly have people that are not there that are the best to do the job, people question the integrity of the game. People are going to question the integrity of the game when you're influencing the outcome of games because you're betting on them.
People are really – I found this out over the years, Mark. People are really bad in general when it comes to unintended consequences. The NFL fought for years to keep gambling out of the game for this type of reason. Now, as everything with the NFL, greed is a part of it too. They also didn't want anyone making money off their product. If there was going to be something, they better get a cut of it, because we're the ones providing the product and the popularity. And when they saw it get to the point where you're swimming upstream and it's going to change, you know, the strategy from the league shifted to, well, we got to monetize this ourselves. And understandably so. But if you want to, NIL in college.
College, yeah.
You got all these people on their soapbox for years. You're taking advantage of these young kids. That's their unintended consequences. Now everybody wants the hell out of college football. Transfer portal, everybody moves around. Guys getting paid millions of dollars to stay at college. It has an effect on the game and the product and all unintended consequences. Doesn't matter your moral proclivity. People should be allowed to gamble. It's bad for the game. Because as you pointed out, you don't want people affecting the outcomes of games. Mm-hmm. It's pretty simple.
It's cut and dry in that regard. Yeah.
So you should have kept it out. You can't. And now we are where we are. And you just got to make the best of it. And there are going to be more players suspended. Maybe the whole Indianapolis team, it seems to be everybody in Indianapolis, they have some gambling problems out there. Poor Shane Steichen. There's going to be more guys suspended. So when you have somebody like Isaiah Rodgers, if you get him, great. If you don't get him, just forget about him.
I don't know who it was. I looked down at the chat for a second, and I saw somebody say, this Rodgers guy doesn't sound like he's smart enough to understand the coverages of Vic Fangio's scheme. If he's betting on his own team and games he's playing in from the team facility.
Well, and that's – and Jody and I would have these discussions, and he was more a hardliner. Like, I don't think they – when they started this, I don't think they educated the players very much. They basically sent out a memo and said, this is what you can't do, this is what you can't do. And again, Jody's more of a hardliner, and he said, well, they're adults. Well, yeah, they are adults, and I get it from that perspective. But we were all – when I was 23, 24, I was a freaking idiot. I didn't pay attention to anybody. And so was the vast majority of people. So you do have to educate people, and I think they were too harsh, and that's why they changed it.
Yeah.
But if you don't know, you shouldn't bet on your own team. Yeah, you probably can't understand Vic Fangio's defense. So maybe that commenter has a point.
Yeah, you know? I think so. I think so. And the other thing is, I love when people say these guys are adults. Okay, let's just live in that world for a second here. I've seen adults do plenty of stupid stuff. And I admit now I'm an adult. I don't just do the adulting that has become a big phrase nowadays and all that. Like adults, they mess things up from time to time.
Up all the time.
I love that. They're both adults. Like, oh, adults are perfect. I was unaware of that.
Most people that say they're adults are the ones who do the most shit wrong in their own life, to be honest. And they like to feel better about themselves.
Yeah. But you know who does it? Backwards hat John McMullen.
Yeah, that's
right. The young.
And by the way, hour two, I want to mention we had the booking gods were not kind to us. We're going to get Rick Saratella, a great NFL draft guy, NFL draft Bible, the godfather, now working for the Edmonton Eskimos of the CFL, Mark. We're going to get Rick. He had to travel. Probably the Eskimos want him to uncover some day three gem,
right?
Who's not going to get drafted. So we had to travel. He's going to be on the show Monday.
The dog sled will be up and running again.
Yeah, dog sled will be up and running. Okay. Iditarod. Maybe he's at the Iditarod. What time of year is that?
Yeah. Winter.
Well, it's always winter up there.
I don't know. Best educated guess.
I'm joking.
It's not always
winter, Edmonton. Our buddy Brian Cameron was going to fill in, and his daughter got ill this morning. She's a little under the weather. So I hope she's doing better. So we're working for you, but you got me and Farzi for hour two.
There you go. Coming up in hour two, I do want to uncover. Actually, we can get to this now because we're going to take a little bit of a longer segment here. The concussion test that has come out. And I'm not kidding when we're not that far removed from, you know, how many fingers am I holding up close enough, get back out there. I remember talking to our friend Gary Cobb about this a number of times. It's like a concussion. What's a concussion? Like we call them, what did he call them? Dingers. You got a dinger.
Yeah.
The bell rung, whatever. You good? Yeah, you good? All right, get back out there. You know, and for anyone that watched the concussion movie or, you know, followed the story by, was it Dateline that did it? I forget who it was, but, it's been covered very well, and I think everyone understands what's going on in the NFL. But the NFL now has to have the independent neurologist on the sidelines. This is something that came up with Carson Wentz in that playoff game against the Seahawks when Jadeveon Clowney came down on him. You know, there have been plenty of examples of concussions knocking players out of games. But now it seems like, according to the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, there's the story out there right now where they just got FDA approval for something that they're calling a bedside blood concussion test. This is Pitt Research, and these are the people that did the research when it came to the concussion, and the movie was based on people doing the research there at Pitt.
Those Pittsburgh guys, they're at the forefront. Dr. Joe Maroon, by the way, who once sent me a case of wine at the doc. I hope he's still doing well, but I haven't checked in with him.
Okay.
But he was at the forefront of the concussion research. And Grant Calcaterra's doctor, who, if you remember, Grant had to retire in college from football. And then he went to one of the doctors at the University of Pittsburgh who do all that great work. And they said, no, you're good. You can resume your career after they checked him out. So kind of saved Grant Calcaterra's football career. So it's always been the forefront at those University of Pittsburgh guys.
Mm-hmm. Something must be in those the waters of the three rivers out there, but they're doing a hell of a job when it comes to neurological exams. And one of the things they have now is this test that can almost instantaneously, if they're saying that they could do this bedside, if they're saying they could do this in hospitals, if they're saying they could do this at urgent care facilities as well, they're saying they can also do it on the sidelines.
Well, so I don't know because, you know, it was interesting because David Chow, who you probably know of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Used to be the Chargers team doctor, does great media work now. I think it's at Pro Football Doc, if you want to follow him on X. I got to try to get him on this show, but he's a West Coast guy. People don't like getting up at 6:20, Mark. You do a morning show. You've done a morning show.
Yeah,
for
years. Come on.
It's tough to get people up, especially on the West Coast. But anyway, he just made a quick little mention that there's a big, big difference between bedside and sideline. So he doesn't think it's that close. He doesn't think it's that easy to make that transition from that type of test. You muted yourself, Mark.
Yeah, the way
get 15% off a set of BrakeMess Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Story describes it as patients' bedsides, detecting concussions rapidly and accessibility right at patients' bedside, and someday sidelines at sporting events. So that would be the next step.
Yeah, he thinks that someday's quite a bit away. And you know, he's more of an expert than me, but we'll see how it shakes out. It would make things, I think, anytime you could standardize something, because, and I don't know how you can standardize concussions. Who was I talking to? Oh, man. Noel Foley. Are you a wrestling guy? Mick Foley, you muted yourself.
Mick Foley. There we go. Foley. I know Mick Foley, but yeah.
Well, no. Noelle Foley's his daughter. And she got a concussion on a roller coaster. I was talking to her at WrestleMania. She got a concussion on a roller coaster. And by the way, she's extremely attractive, Mark, so you could understand why I was talking to her.
Well, you're a smooth operator.
Yeah. Anyway,
yes.
It's been 2 years. She's still having effects from this particular concussion. And because she had trained to be a pro wrestler, and I asked her right away, I'm like, oh, you got it when you're training? No, she got it on a roller coaster. And she hasn't recovered from it. And I only bring that up because you bring up Carson Wentz in that playoff game. It affects so many people different ways. And to get something more standard, because people were upset that Carson Wentz wasn't able to return to that game. And there were others who were very untoward about it and saying he should have tried to return to the game. It's such a murky thing. And they're still involved in the early stages of research, and it affects so many people different ways. I don't know how it becomes standardized, to be honest. It's just one of those things.
Yeah. The research continues, and this, at least the only thing that this does for me is it gives me more hope that they'll be able to do it in a more, not that I'm looking for timely fashion to be the number one priority here. Accuracy as I want to be the number one priority here, but it's showing you that they're continuing to make progress in that category that obviously affects what people are very much interested in, especially in the world of football. So it's another advancement. Now you can at least put it there.
Yeah. And that's a good thing. Yeah, but we'll see how quickly bedside goes to sideline, Dr. Chow thinks it's going to take a while.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. When it comes to some things outside the medical world, some things outside the gambling world, we talked earlier in the show about Jalen Hurts and what was being said about him publicly since his press conference, and whether or not you wanted to see him be more of a leader, whether or not you want to see him be a guy that can command the offense a little bit better. I am still very curious, and going into last season, and I remember talking to you last year about the two biggest question marks going into the year had to do with the coordinator positions. Well, here we are, John, a year removed, and those two coordinators are no longer here. In fact, one didn't even finish the season as the coordinator. Well, with the title at least, but he wasn't the play caller. He got demoted, as we know, with a couple of games left in the year. Now you have two guys that have a boatload of experience in the position that they're going to be in for the Eagles as the defensive and offensive coordinator of the Eagles. We've talked a lot about Vic Fangio recently. We just talked to him about a lot with Paul Domwich. But when it comes to Kellen Moore, I think a lot of people look at this offense and they see A.J. Brown and they see the roster, and everyone knows the roster by now. If you're watching the show, you know the roster. But the word meshing keeps getting used every time we hear Nick Sirianni talk, whether it was the end of the year press conference where he was alluding to the offense coordinator being in control of the offense, but it'll be a meshing of what he's got and what I got. The owners meetings in Orlando 2 weeks ago, Nick Sirianni talking at the breakfast table about a meshing of scheme here. What is it that you like to see, or what is your expectation of what that meshing is when you talk about what Nick Sirianni likes to do and what Kellen Moore likes to do? When you hear that word meshing, John, what does that word mean to you when it comes to the combination of these two offenses?
More motion. That's it.
That's the only thing.
That's it. That's it. That is it. I think it's a total overreaction to what happened at the end of last season. I'm very above board. I would have kept Nick as head coach. I would have kept Brian Johnson. This was a top 10 offense. I was a young first-time coach. The assumption that you're not going to have hiccups with a first-time offensive coordinator is ludicrous. They had hiccups with Nick Sirianni and Shane Steichen in 2021. They had hiccups with Jonathan Gannon on defense in 2021. Look how that worked out in 2022 when there was a little bit of continuity. With Sean, it's more open-ended. I don't know what went on with Sean, because you don't fire people at 10-1. And basically that's when he got fired as defensive coordinator. He was kept on,
right?
But demoted, to be specific about it. So something else was going on, probably personality wise. I kept hearing the word presence. He didn't have a presence. With Brian, it was just, you needed a scapegoat, because Jeffrey wasn't happy and nobody was happy. I'm not saying you should be happy. It was embarrassing. And that's, by the way, I heard one Eagles executive in the Tampa Bay game say that during the game, because of how Tampa Bay is set up, they're right behind us. And the words used were, and I can say them here, baby ears, fucking embarrassing. That's how he described the Tampa Bay game. Mm-hmm. So everybody was upset. And I get that part of it, but I think cooler heads should have prevailed at the end of the day. There's this assumption that motion is creative. You know, it's not. It can serve a purpose. It usually tests the discipline of the defense. I certainly think the Eagles should have used it more under Nick Sirianni. They were bottom of the league. And Nick himself says you never want to be bottom five in the league in anything. And they're bottom five in motion. 32nd, to be exact. Dead last. So they should use it. Nick should have used it a little bit more and been a little bit more open-minded. But he came from Philip Rivers, who he loves. And Philip preferred to do certain things formationally, to allow him to understand what the defense was doing. Other people use motion for that. Philip Rivers was the kind of guy who was smart enough, high IQ. He could do that. Can you do that with a younger quarterback? Probably not. You probably need more of the tricks of the trade. So send somebody in motion. You identify coverages a little bit earlier, and that probably would have helped Jalen Hurts. That's it. That's what I think the big difference is.
And bubble screens, tight end screens. What about that?
They're a staple of the modern NFL. Unfortunately, every team runs bubble screens.
I'm not hating on them
as much as you.
I'm hating on the and I know what did you say is the ugliest thing you can see.
Ugliest thing.
Okay, but I'm not so much
ugliest
arguing against
playing football.
I'm arguing against the frequency of them. When it came to the Eagles.
Well, it's just a math equation. It's basically, and unfortunately, this is the analytical part of the game.
Oh, God, I'm bored already.
Yeah, exactly. There's an extra guy. So it's an extension of the running game. The Eagles ran it with Shane Steichen. They ran it with Brian Johnson. They ran it with Nick Sirianni. You got the numbers advantage, so throw it outside. And then it's about execution. Mm. The problem is they don't execute it well. And that has to do with, all right, I'm going to bore you more, Mark.
Oh, God. Here we go. You already said the extension of the run game thing is just that puts the quarter in the machine, man. I'm about to go in rage mode.
Blame Shane for that because he's the one. Although he was more colorful about it.
Oh, even when Reed said it. Even when Reed would talk about the screen game, the Brian Westbrook game. Oh, it's an extension of the run. Yeah, but it's not a run. Anyway.
Yeah. I had a Jody flashback. No, it's not. Well, it is from there. From their perspective.
Right.
And that's all that matters.
Uh-huh.
I said it yesterday on the show, and people who watch this show are tired of hearing me saying it, but I say it because I want to drill it in the people's heads and I want them to realize it. People do not judge play calling. They judge play results. And I say it all the time, Mark. I talked to Doug Peterson about this, and Doug was very honest about it. And he said, guess what? Sometimes the players pick him up, and he's got a crappy play call, and a great player, Zach Ertz, 4th-and-1 in the Super Bowl. That's all Zach Ertz, man, manipulating, and to a certain degree, Nick Foles, just having a feel for the game, converting. And sometimes you have the greatest play call ever, and you got the other team. You got them in the perfect situation, and you got them. And maybe the right guard misses a block. Mm. Maybe the right tackle. Well, Lane doesn't miss many blocks. But you get my point.
Yeah.
One guy bucks it up. Nobody ever knows you got the best play call ever on. So they don't judge play calls. They judge play results. So anytime you hear – and that's about teaching and execution, right? Getting guys in the right position to succeed and making sure they know what to do on a particular play.
Mm-hmm. Well,
go ahead.
I was going to say, here's what I'll take exception to. I think Philadelphia, and I can't speak for every fan base, but I think Philadelphia does argue play call more often than not argues play call over result. Now, the result is the headline. It's ultimately what matters. But for instance, the Devontae Smith blocking on a screen to, was it Quez Watkins? Or I think, can't remember if it was Quez or Dallas Goedert in Seattle. When Devontae Smith got hurt. I think most people went, even if that's not a smart play call. Like, even if you get a couple of yards out of that and you get a gain, that's not a smart play call. Or if Jalen Hurts throws the ball downfield 1st-and-10 with 8:15 left in the fourth quarter and you're winning, that's not a smart play call. It's not a smart decision.
It's not a smart decision. It's ironic in the Seattle game, since you brought that up. Look, the bubble screen is, again, that's like launch angle in baseball or three-pointers in basketball. That's the analytical part of the game. Again, numbers. Who's got the numbers? So everybody runs it, and then it's about execution. And even Devontae at his size has to block occasionally on a bubble screen. You get hurt, obviously it's going to look bad. And certainly if you miss a block, it's going to look like the shittiest play ever, which it always does when you miss that block. It's ironic. Seattle won the game on the exact same play, but they executed it. In the case of Jalen Hurts, that was a poor decision, as you mentioned, because Seattle was playing cover two, might have been cover three, but either way, they had a safety back on that side of the field. He underthrew the football to A.J. Brown, number one. And
that was the end of the game. That was the end of the game.
The end of the game. And Seattle, by the way, if you go back to Drew Lock, he read it correctly. Same play. Eagles didn't have the safety over the top. They beat Bradbury. I believe it was Bradbury. Touchdown. Holds up. They win the game. Eagles are trying the same thing. And they had won on that play in previous games. It's never a bad thing to try to go to A.J. Brown down the field, as long as you don't have Julian Love over the top and you're underthrowing the football. So, again, execution, decision-making, more than play call. And that was the freelancing play, by the way. That wasn't even the play call. That was an audible at the line of scrimmage where A.J. and Jalen thought they had something, and they didn't. Yeah, a lot of layers to it, but people are judging that result and saying that's a terrible play call. Well, it wasn't even the play call. It was an audible because they thought they had something.
On that, just real quick on this, because I do want to move on for it, but I remember Shane Steichen saying, I think it was after 2 years ago, the Arizona game, where, I mean, you talk about bubble screens and tight end screens. That seemed like all they were doing in the second half. And I remember Shane Steichen saying that that was a comfort zone play for Jalen Hurts. And a lot of those were checkdowns. And I heard Nick Sirianni echo that same sentiment. I don't remember Jalen Hurts ever backing that up. I don't remember him being asked about it even. But that's why I talk about, when I talk about the Eagles offense and kind of the quad of blame when it comes to the Eagles offense, I talk about analytics. From Jeffrey Lurie's influence, Julian Lurie's influence, and all that. I talk about Brian Johnson, of course. I talk about the game planning of Nick Sirianni. And then I talk about Jalen Hurts' decision-making. And it's like when I watch a play and it doesn't go well, or I watch him line up and I think, this seems curious. What's going on here? I think, okay, well, who am I blaming here? Is this the analytic influence? Is this Jalen Hurts' comfort zone? Is this what the game plan was going into it? Or is this Brian Johnson trying to make the best possible play call he can and it's just not working out? And I think that could be said for almost every NFL franchise.
Nobody goes into a game saying, I'm going to throw 15 bubble screens. I will say that.
Okay, fair enough.
Brian Johnson. But, when college football starts up again, just turn on the first college football game. You're going to see 15 bubble screens. That's what they do at the college level. Is Jalen Hurts comfortable with that versus a more traditional check down? Probably. So what you think of a check down is, and most people, most longtime football fans think of as, dumping it off to the back. Go progression one, you got your monitor. Mark Farzetta's got his progression. There we go. One, two, dump it down to Saquon Barkley. Jalen Hurts is probably more comfortable with the bubble screen. Because where'd he learn? He learned at Alabama. He learned under Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma, where he had his most success. Watch a freaking Lincoln Riley game. Settle in. You're going to see some bubble screens.
All right. So note to self, stop watching Lincoln Riley. No. Fair enough. All right. I want to ask you one more question, and I'm going to save it when we come back, but I'm going to ask you now, and you can think about it. One thing, people in the chat, feel free to comment on this as well. If you're Kellen Moore, the first thing you do in that meeting where Jalen Hurts wants to be a sponge, what are you doing with Jalen Hurts to make sure you get the best version of Jalen Hurts? It could be Nussmeier. It could be Kellen Moore. What's the first thing this new coaching staff, I'll make it more general, should do with Jalen Hurts to make him get back to the quarterback that we saw competing for an MVP award and taking this team to the Super Bowl? Number one thing you got to do. We'll talk about that when we come back here on Birds 365.
At Nutrafol, we don't just help your hair. We help your body grow it. Because it's never just about your hair. It can be your job or your deodorant or your lunch or just normal life. That's why our whole body approach targets the key root causes of hair thinning. Discover your root causes and why we're the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com. These statements have not been approved by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease paid for by Nutraceutical Wellness, Inc.